Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood.
What's going on, everyone? Happy Monday. And unlike many recent Mondays, it's finally a dry, sunny one here in Southern California. And I know you're in somewhere in Texas today, right, Bruce?
Right, San Antonio. Lovely San Antonio, Texas, south of the Metroplex. So great to be down here with some colleagues, getting some continuing education credit hours and enjoying the river walk and Mexican food and warmer weather. So good stuff.
You got to be careful with the chips and salsa. Too many of those. And before you know it, I know for me, I get pretty bloated pretty quickly.
It's like, it's salt intake. I wish that was the only bloating I had, but yeah, it's another calorie intake. So you're going to have to get back to fighting weight here before summertime. But anyway, gotta treat it like it's a vacation, kind of go into denial and say, you know, it's okay. It's okay to overeat because I'm with friends and this doesn't happen all the time. Problem is.
And I'm on a trip and.
Well, it's just that whole chain, like, oh, it's Halloween. Oh, I'll just eat some candy. Hey, it's Thanksgiving. I'll just indulge. Oh, well, it's Christmas time. Oh, it's Valentine's Day. Oh, you know, it's always some disaster of food, you know, waiting, lurking every 90 days or so. But so it's going really, really well. We've got some good feedback on your from our last show about the, you know, business coaching and channel partners and all the spooky stuff you were talking about.
The listeners better gear up then, because we're about to enter, as I like to say, conference season, at least for me, respective to technology. There's a seasonality to every business out there, and for me right now, we're ending into conference season, which means, you know, lots of heavy hitter conferences between about March and end of summer, really. You know, so I'm gonna be on quite a travel tour here over the next several months, and you know, have hopefully, not even hopefully, I know I will, you know, lots of great insight to share with listeners week in and week out. So I'm looking forward to that. So if they liked the rant last week, then they will certainly like the rants in the days to come. And speaking of Brucey, you've already had a nice little time there in San Antonio, you know, anything you care to share with the listeners?
Man, you know, it's very, yeah, very, very atypical, but what's going on down here is not near in the common parlance of coaching or coaching techniques. However, you know, there are people who get into trouble because of their boundary violating behaviors. We see this particularly in the business world or corporate sector, or we'll just say in the business world, and where employees and or executives, or even all the way up into the C-suite, you know, get into trouble. Now, when they get into trouble with and I mean like Me Too cases, we'll say, you know, with let's say sexually inappropriate boundaries, and so obviously, if these folks are employees, either they get on an improvement plan or they get fired. But I think in the C-suite or upper management and in the C-suite, there's more of a tendency to reach out and give these folks some kind of help, you know, if they've done something that isn't reason to terminate for cause or something like that. So, so this isn't so much the how to coach, but kind of looking at the different types of boundary violating behaviors that kind of go on. So it's interesting from that perspective.
So it's almost like, yeah, so it's sexual harassment. There's probably verbal harassment. It's almost like an HR training, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, on steroids, people putting cameras in cracks of restroom doors and upskirting. And no, this is kind of the deviance fest, the deviant behavior and the penalties it might cause, you know, and kind of going off to the side, like one of the big things, all this photography, you know, these kids take pictures and these kids send pictures and people send each other naked pictures and pictures of body parts. And whoa, you know, how that can kind of go sideways, you know, real fast into an ethical problem, a moral problem, and then, you know, employment problem, and then possible civil problem, and then into a criminal problem. So just, it is kind of interesting.
Yeah. That's an interesting one because, like, especially in the example you're sharing there, like, okay, let's say someone, takes a photo. Like, so we were talking about this actually over Christmas time, you know, back at, the Nimmergood Ranch, right? You know, my dad, I guess, had read something around a boy, you know, a 17-year-old, basically, a boy that had taken video of this, let's just say, you know, an act, you know, sexual act that took place with he and, you know, someone else. And posted it on or sent it through Snapchat. And then that was subpoenaed somehow because obviously her parents weren't happy about it. And obviously the privacy laws change if anything's transmitted and certain, I don't know what channel, social media channel, but social media channels and or the internet, obviously the privacy laws then change. So it just brings up this whole question of how do you keep it all straight? You know, first of all, then there's this whole other concept of what I like to call digital footprint, which is out there everywhere and everyone has it. And at what point in time are we protected or do we really just need to accept the fact that we aren't protected? We're going to be watched at all times by someone, whether it be Facebook or, you know, the own camera on our iPad or iPhone at some point in time, you know, it's just inevitable. Like, what is the right answer anymore? Even when people aren't doing malicious acts, you know, it's out there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the definitions of integrity is what is somebody doing when nobody's looking?
Right.
And problem is that everybody's looking all the time, like you said, through one mechanism or another. And so, man, you know, there really is no, I don't want to say rest for the weary, but you know, sooner or later everybody gets caught. It's kind of the mantra that I tell about it. Sooner or later everybody gets caught doing whatever it is, you know. In today's world, I mean, you just are going to get discovered, and somebody's going to discover you. Just think of all the private camera footage that the Chicago police utilized to do with this Jesse Smollett case or whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, there was way more private footage from private buildings and stores than there was from kind of public street surveillance, right? And they could string it together. And anyway, we won't go into that case, but so I'm just saying that seemed like it would be an impossible, after hearing the story, like, wow, that would be a hard thing to show wow, these guys, you know, beat this guy up, and man, that's just too bad. You know, and in my mind, I'm like, oh, well, you know, they're never going to find out. Sure enough, there was enough camera footage to really piece together a nice investigative package. Well, but back,
you could say the same about Robert Kraft too.
Yeah. Oh man, you know, I know, boy, you can imagine the boiler room discussions we've had here about Robert Kraft, and you know, here's a guy, but it's those situations are about power and control. They really are. It's about power. It's about kind of owning that person. You know what I mean? It's about that. It's about the differential. It's about the power. And it's kind of odd how, you'll see, you know, guys like that with all the resources in the world, go to a place like they went to get that particular need satisfied. And, wow, you know, I mean, it's just, because, you know, I've talked to men like that. You know, I've interviewed a lot of men that have been in that situation over the years, probably over 100 or so. And I would say, well, gosh, why didn't you just go to a bar? Or, I know that sounds old school too, doesn't it? You know, online or Tinder, Bumble, something, plenty of fish. I mean, you know, there's a plethora of ways to engage with willing partners, you know, to do sexual activities with, of almost any variety, you know. No, I just don't want that. I don't want the engagement. I don't want to spend time talking to this. Are you kidding me? I have to talk to this person and get to know them, and then there's some sort of see what I mean? It's just, it goes from a two-way interaction to almost a one-way interaction, and then so, you know, and then when it's a paid transaction, you're paying the person to leave. I mean, it's a transaction, and that's that. So, so one of the takeaways, I guess, in the coaching environment is that there are some companies that have been around for a long time. Okay.
Right.
Okay, there are companies out there, various and sundry, right? Different industries. You know, it's not just, it's the Neanderthal company that makes gun barrels. And here's the kind of savagery you expect from the C-suite of the gun barrel company, you know, whose Christmas parties at a strip club or whatever. I mean, it's not just like that, but put in your mind, though, a lot of companies that have been around for a long time, their sales force, right? It's usually the sales force. The sales force engages with customers at a certain way, and then they entertain in a certain way, and then they conduct their personal lives or that thin membrane between work and personal life before they go home to let's say wife or kids or whatever. And so there you have it. You know, that's where some of these men in the workforce lead this kind of almost double life, or it's a life that really does include sexual activities. I was thinking, you know, and I get the, well, yeah, we go to the strip club and da 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 da. It's almost like we do the meeting, we ink the deal, and then we kind of go to the strip club. Or we'll go eat, ink the deal, eat, and then, you know, good guys go right, bad guys will go, you know, and then off to the strip club or whatever, you know.
Well, in some cultures, the strip club is needed before the deal is inked, but
I guess I think there's a lot to be said there. Yes, there could have been some prior, you know, we see that with the signing of college athletes, you know, so, right? I mean, let's just get real. Like, that's part of the recruiting package for some of these schools. And like, how do you, even get away with that. So
and they write that off, by the way. They do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and then it's just so there is this kind of darker side to some of these companies and sometimes you'll even have the female staff kind of going along and going along with it. Now sometimes they don't want to go along with it, you know, and that's usually where the rubber hits the road, where somebody you know, feels like they had to go to the strip club to effect this deal and they weren't necessarily comfortable, or somebody had to go to the strip club but they were a recovering alcoholic and they felt like their sobriety was in jeopardy. That's a real case, by the way. I didn't make that one. That was a real coaching case I had. So
they felt like they had. Okay, so walk me through that one again.
Okay, so the good old boys have one lady and, you know, she's there, and the good old boys usually conduct business, and part of that is the strip club. And so the lady doesn't say anything until after the fact, and then, you know, makes a complaint saying, hey, you know, I was subjected to this environment where I could have lost my sobriety, and kind of this, I was under duress type of claim, right? That was part of the business deal. So she didn't want to threaten the business deal, but she didn't feel comfortable going into that environment because it could have threatened her sobriety. So it's really interesting to see, to argue, did you not have free will to go there? Like, if you didn't go there, would you have lost your job? What kind of force did you feel to go there? You know, you'd have to kind of pick apart the duress argument. But the thing of it is like, you just should be able to conduct business no matter what industry without that sexual component. You know, you just don't need that. You know,
yeah.
You just don't need it. You just don't. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, you're like some of these gender. I mean, you think that would be dying out. I don't know. Maybe you could speak for the millennials or the Zs.
And that's, you know, that's one thing I have to pat, you know, ourselves on the back as a millennial. I can't say that millennials have ever really been about, you know, conducting business because of a strip club. Like, I've never had that be the case. You know, like a deal is imminent or is necessary, you know, to happen because we took them to a strip. Like, that's never been the case. Whereas I have had situations like that with, you know, the older generation. So no offense, boomers, but y'all are the fucked up ones.
The ones going all out of these clubs, huh?
Yeah, you make fun of us millennials and our work ethic and this and that, but y'all are the ones that want to, you know, ink a deal sexual favor.
so no deals got inked at the Ultra Fest in Miami with a lot of Plur, you know, Molly, Plur, EDM, no EDM deals.
No EDM deals for me. No, I'm sure to stay away from that stuff.
That was a good try, wasn't it? You gotta give me credit. You gotta give me credit.
It's
that was a good try.
He, you know, was promising, you know, this lap of luxury, and you know, really what people got was like grilled cheese sandwiches, and on Netflix. I'd have to look it up, but yeah, it's like that, you know, promise the world, the moon and the stars, and get something far from it. No, that's not really how us millennials roll. Now, I will admit though that we are about doing as little as possible. As little as humanly possible. And here's why, though, and I want to bring this up, and it's important to note for the listeners out there. You know, studies have shown, you know, for example, that your average boomer would stay with a job, I think it was like 8 to 10 years on average, you know, average tenure, whereas it's maybe like 2 to 3 for a millennial. And your average millennial will change jobs 7 to 10 times in their career and all these facts, right? Well, the reason is because of the cost of living relative to the inflation, relative to the economics of society today, has necessitated that. That's the bottom line. I hate to break it to the boomers, but the cost of living, the cost of education coupled with inflation, it's not, you know, in other words, the trending economics of what we get paid or what your average worker gets paid compared to the cost of inflation, it doesn't mathematically match up. Okay, so that's why millennials are staying at home. That's why millennials aren't fucking loyal, is because they're like, well, fuck this, you know, like, you know, we're basically getting the short end of the stick. We're good, you know, you know, we drew the short straw. We're never gonna collect on Social Security or any of these things that we've been paying into, and you know what? Fuck it. Fuck it. And so a little bit of that is hedging your bet, right? So the whole concept of, which I love, like Google and Amazon and some of these great companies have adopted, of the 20% time or the net time of giving employees time to develop ideas and businesses outside of the workplace is so necessary, especially for millennials, because millennials see that as a survival tactic. It's not just like a hobby thing, it's a survival tactic, believe it or not, if you really trace it all the way through. They're looking to develop other business ideas because they know at any point in time they can be canned in their current role and they'd be fucked, you know. And oh, they're already living at mom and dad, so that already sucks. So yeah, I'm kind of a little bit on a rant, but it's obviously related to the,
you know,
economics piece of it.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so here's going to be the boomer kind of question, I guess. It's not a response per se, but like, and look, you did this too. You went to college. You have an undergraduate degree and a graduate degree. You know, you have graduate training, right, in business and those things. Yeah. So you did that kind of American, I don't want to say American dream, but right. I mean, kind of what was expected of you, right? That you were socialized to do, right? To go to college and this and that. And so I'm kind of sitting here because I'm worried. I'm kind of asked, this is a double barrel thing. One, I'm asking because I want to hear your experience. And then two, I'm thinking about I have two kids, you know, one of them being a senior in high school who's going to, right, start a D1 school and go to the business school. So I'm kind of curious for him as well. Right. As a Z, but so long story short, so you went to school, you did these things, you had a job at, right. Wasn't it Cisco or something? I mean,
yeah, Cisco.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, and you're saying that, and you're obviously not in your parents' house. So how were you able to, or did it take you a while? I mean, how were you able to not do that? You came out, you went to school, you may or may not have amassed student loan.
I got a job that allowed me to pay my bills.
Okay.
And I paid my bills.
Okay.
And then when I decided to enter into entrepreneurship, I had amassed enough savings, you know, to do so. Right.
Okay.
And then once I entered the next phase of my life, you know, the divorce.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And decided I needed to, quote unquote, get back to work for a little bit to dig myself out of the grave. And this is important, you know, point to note for the question that you're asking. I was fucked. I was absolutely fucked. As a man who had, you know, had high marks in corporate America, had a master's and undergraduate bachelor's degree in business. When I tried to enter back into the workforce, you know, out of necessity and desire, right, to get myself, you know, through a challenging financial time, I was screwed. I mean, because every employer looked at me as damaged goods at that point. Because I had been brainwashed by the other side of the spectrum, let's call it entrepreneurship, because a lot of these HR and hiring managers and higher ups, they want to bring in a certain mold,
cookie cutter kind of guy.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're outside of the box, there's a very few companies out there that would even accept that. Now, Apple was one of them that I did get had some discussions with, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at that, didn't go anywhere. But there are very few companies out there that would even give me an interview.
Okay. Well, look, let's go back, because I'm so glad we got time left on the show too. So what effed you? The fact that you left a traditional business sphere job to go into entrepreneurship, or was it something with the breakup? You had to take a sabbatical because of what was going on personally, or what effed you? You said you were fucked. Like what was it that did that to you?
Well, just inability. I mean, the inability to get traction with interviews. Like, so it was just like dead air. It was sorry, you know, we've moved forward with another. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I'm applying for, you know.
But what damage? I mean, to me, on paper, what I mean, I'm looking at a guy, sharp, bright, intelligent, good looking guy, yada yada, and educated with paper to boot. How, I don't get it. Like, how did
when you leave corporate America,
okay,
and you go and start your own business, you basically, in corporate America's eyes, you're either that or you're that. You're either an entrepreneur or you're a corporate.
I got you.
And so by leaving and going and steering outside of the box, I'm perceiving, and I don't know this to be true, but just based on the lack of success I had,
you know, right.
I'm saying that it was, it's like damaged goods. It's almost like they look at you as like damaged goods.
Wow. No, I mean, that just makes me angry in a way, you know, but it just shows, you know, how, like you said, that corporate mentality is, and how also extremely competitive it is, and how many people are out there maybe, you know, competing for similar spots and whatnot. But man, you know, to me, part of that's violated just because, you know, and it's probably just me being a boomer, you know, it's like, I'm looking at the education, I'm looking at other stuff, and I'm looking at real time footage and, you know what? I mean, if I had an employee come to me, or a potential employee, say, hey, I was out there trying to do my own thing. I did a couple of startups. I was involved in a couple of startups. And for whatever reason, they didn't work, and I want to come back in and work a job and maybe contemplate some other options, a while down the road. But in the meantime, I'd like to work for your company and give you 100%. And you know what I mean? And I'm an educated, talented hand with some experience. I'd like to bring that to the company. So, you know, I don't think I'd look negatively. I'd be neutral or kind of positive. Like, well, gosh, thank God that thank God their venture failed, because now I can have you, you know, working for me. I don't know, man. I don't know. Maybe it's just I'm too old or something, but I get what you're saying. You violated the corporate mold, and you were kind of branded as something, and it took you a while to get back on your feet, and if you will. And now you've created a mechanism where you're kind of, I think you're doing kind of both at the same time, right? So,
right.
We've got to get on our 1099 mindset book. We're going to write that book. So anyway, no, it's cool, man. Thanks for sharing. You know, I mean, that's, you know what I mean? Like, had you gone to Stanford? Let me ask you this. So let's say you went to Stanford and gotten your undergraduate or MBA from Stanford, and then you go out and you had a bump on the road. Do you still think you would have been as jammed up? I'm just asking. I'm not shaming you for not going to Stanford, by the way. You know why I'm asking. I'm just thinking.
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
And then your master's is from a Stanford-esque type. What? You know what I mean? Like, you're right there. For God, I mean,
Pepperdine's a pretty credible.
Exactly, program. Dude. It's not. Yeah, it's Pepperdine. I mean, you know what I'm. Just, I don't know, man. I'm just too linear today. I'm just not feeling it. It's unthinkable to me. You know.
Well, it's unconscionable to me, well, but it doesn't
you know
matter.
What it is. I know what it is. You know what it is. I'll tell you what it is. You're in California. I just figured it out, dude. That's the problem. There's probably some truth into that statement. I wasn't just being, you know, smart ass. You know what I mean? Your brand, if you will, in Texas or Kansas City or St. Louis or Chicago or Atlanta, you know what I mean? Your brand, right? Such as it is, it's a good one, you know, probably curries more favor in a more down-home market. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Right, right.
What do you think about that?
I think nudge, like, nudge, wink, wink. Too fucking
say no
funny,
more,
man.
Say no more.
You're too fucking funny, dude. You're on point today.
I know, man. I didn't mean to for this to happen. It just kind of happened. When you start talking, man, I was like, man, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. But because I'd be furious. I'm putting myself in your shoes. I mean, just low key or high key, being honest, you know, right now, like, man, I went to Pepperdine. I did this. I had the experience over here with this major, major company doing major stuff. I'm the author of the world famous book, Entrepreneurship. And what? Are you talking to me right now? Be twisting my pinky ring? Are you blinking kidding me? No, man. Could be, right? Because I would think where you are in California is just pretty, you know, lots of what, you know, just lots of people down there, right? Clamoring for lots or not so many jobs. And the cost of living is very high and your tax structure is very high. I looked at having an office on Wilshire Boulevard. I had a really tempting offer too. Gosh, brother. Oh, well,
sexy.
No, not like that. Yeah, you know, he's easy, not like that. But in a business kind of way, and man, you know, I'd be sharing the office with some very competent individuals, this and that. Man, it was just cost prohibitive for me to even move an S corporation or some sort of an LLC, you know, have it based in Southern California. It would have taken me to the cleaners. Not really.
Yeah, I think it's,
go ahead.
It's a couple thousand dollars in overhead minimum a year just to clear your, you know,
well,
your,
just that,
your
yeah,
expenses.
So anyway, I don't want this to turn to a California bashing show either.
Oh, sure you do, Bruce.
No, I don't. No, I'm on LA Talk Radio. What are you talking about right now?
I'm just messing with you, man.
We love Sherman Oaks. Hey, how's it going, everybody? I think that's what we love. But anyway.
No, it's just the cost of living in California, though, is relatively high. I think there is something to be said about the, you know, the competition out here versus other parts of the country. Sure, I could see that. And I wasn't maybe opening myself up to, you know, relocating as much as I probably could have. But you know, all that aside, it still begs the question, wow, you know, how freaking competitive it is, I really think it's beyond that. It's just the perception of, you know, damaged goods. Companies want to see a linear progression and track record.
Yeah.
Candidates that they're looking to hire. And if there's like this sort of sidestep, if you will, it's like, whoa, what's going on there?
Right. Right. So it really is. And everything is going to be metrics driven, you know, just hardline metrics driven, you know. Yeah, I was able to take this, whatever, 4X, 5X, blah, 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 right? And produce this, produce that, and lead teams, and here is our yield. And, you know, and I think moving forward, you're going to be able to do that. You know what I mean? I started here. I did this. I engaged. I brought this company to this, you know. And then, you know, I like this kind of, you're one of the new authors, and I've been really kind of continuing to understand this whole storyboarding and the arc of the story and all that other stuff that sounded so, it sounds kind of strange, but it does make sense in terms of the way people think and, you know, and tailoring that type of strategy to what you're doing with Fablet and actually what I'm doing with one of my revenue streams with the federal prison consulting stream. You know what I mean? Because that is definitely a story. There's a lot of stories there. So it's, you know, very, very thought provoking and all that good stuff. But anyway,
yeah, I mean, it can be fun. It can be challenging at times, but, yeah, I mean, I still wouldn't trade the journey for anything, because we're all on our own journeys for our own reasons, and they shape us, you know, yeah, the people that we are. So
and you know, this is, I mean, any time can be the time, and there's entrepreneurs that have children and small children and other more domestic obligations but man, no, I'm, you know, like, this is the time, like, go for it. You know what I mean? Because
right,
you do have some obligations. I get it. But you know what I mean? Not quite with the family per se. You know what I mean? So this is that time to really, you know,
run hard,
get some traction, get some things going. And then if it's meant to be for you to do the other stuff, then you'll be able to be in a position to do that more comfortably. You know, I don't think you're ever comfortable enough, but you know, you have a venue to do that. But yeah, man, interesting stuff, man. Interesting stuff, man. Business in today's world, man. Just, woo.
I am seeing a big shift go on too right now. You know, and Fablet is certainly proof of this. You know, with, you know, my role as acting chief revenue officer within the company, you know, I'm still young by most people's measure. And it's not just me at this company, it's lots of companies I'm seeing investing in younger, let's call it millennial generation talent that can bring that insight, but also that passion and awareness of the market to bear with these companies. So I'm seeing a bit of that trending going on, which is refreshing to see. To me, it's the passing of the torch is not, it's not complete. It's not even close to being complete, but I think it's definitely finally taking shape.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. Yeah. The world is changing really fast, and you know, you just have to rely on people, and it's usually younger people most of the time that are right fully engaged with the technology and, you know, the thinking and the language and those things. And while, you know, there still is this other guard out there that has a lot of the money and wealth and resources and those things, but how that gets utilized and how things go on a daily basis, and who is the, if you will, the workforce, you know, in the country, then there it is. You know, you're then, it's millennial time and Z time, you know, and that's just the fact of the matter, and you have to make adjustments accordingly. So no, you're absolutely right. It's just fantastic fun to see how quick things are happening, and so having to be nimble, you know. So like you said, you know, you've done a lot, you know, you've done a lot in a little bit of time and got a lot more to do and just have all the potential. How do you stay resilient in that kind of, I don't want to say in a startup world, but how, you know, do you find yourself saying, you know, you believe in yourself and your capabilities, and like what gives you, you know, resilience in sometimes a pretty dog eat dog, you know, uncertain market?
Yeah, that's actually a really timely and great question, because, you know, this more than anything else I've worked in, including as your own, you know, business owner, when you're working in someone else's business, that might be a little bit more established in terms of how long they've been in place and whatnot. But you're coming in and you're establishing a new group or new entity, in my case, a sales team. It's kind of like starting a new division. It's starting a new company within a company, and uncertainty is abundant. So first of all, learning to deal with uncertainty and be comfortable, or as Tony Robbins likes to say, you know, the more comfortable you can get with being uncomfortable or being uncertain, the more you'll thrive in the world, right? So that has been something that I have learned as a skill over the years. And you get more comfortable with being uncomfortable. I don't know how else to put it other than that. And what I mean by that specifically is, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, you don't know what the next month or even the week holds, right? In terms of forecast or outlook. Or like in my case, in a sales orientation, you know, let's just use a specific example. You look out a month and it's like, oh shit, looks kind of light on funnel next month. Ooh, that's looking bad. So obviously managing expectations across the organization or up the organization, or in my case to, you know, the co-founders, that's a big piece of the role. But it's really just getting comfortable being uncomfortable and being hyper confident at all times, because ultimately at the end of the day, people do what people will follow what you do, not what you say. They might follow what you say too, but they'll follow more with what you do. And my philosophy of leadership has always been to lead from the front. So I do my best not to ask anything of anyone else that I'm not willing to do myself, you know, which is why, you know, I missed the, you know, meeting a couple weeks ago on the Monday, cause I was traveling to Atlanta cause I was going to a conference on my birthday, which was your birthday, as we found out too.
Our birthday.
So our birthday, our collective birthday.
There you go.
You know, it's like, did I really want to be in Atlanta, you know, for that? No, but it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, somebody's got to do the work, and the work needs to happen, and that's that, you know. And also to be the spouse or family member or whatever, friend of an entrepreneur, that's a tough gig, you know. It's like you know, like being with a cop or something, you know, you're kind of on call and gotta go, wheels up in 20, no, I mean, I have a pretty, you know, even as a boomer, I run a pretty aggressive travel schedule for a guy who claims to be semi-retired. Anyway, but I'm running out, you know, I'm here in San Antonio and I got another engagement in Tucson Friday. So
nice.
But yeah, thanks.
So you Southwest or what?
No, this one's a private jet, man. No, it's a private. You know,
baby.
Yeah, private jet. Yep. So,
well, why don't we have a whole segment on private jets?
They're gonna serve a light breakfast on the flight, man. I'm excited, so I'll be taking pictures of it and I'll probably put it out on social media.
Is that your first time flying private?
No, but it'll be nice to get some of that wood grain, those windows with the wood grain dash on it. That's pretty cool. We'll see. I don't know what it is, what the craft is, but either way, it'll be a spiritual victory. It's always good to get it. I know it's above a King Air, so that's good. So it is a jet. But
well, maybe you can do an IG story on our page.
I could go live.
Yeah, or go live or something.
I'm so tired of there is this kind of net jets kind of people that do stuff that annoy me. So I'll be tasteful about it and just be tasteful about it. If that's an oxymoron, I don't know what it is. But anyway,
be tasteful about being
about the breakfast? I don't know. In a distasteful.
Being Can you be about being gauche at the same time? Exactly. That is kind of an oxymoron, isn't it?
I know. Hey, I was wearing a Greg Norman shirt, so I got it at Sam's. So, you know, stop haters. You know, I'm wearing
humility factor.
There you go. I'm wearing stuff I got at Kohl's. Okay. So, as a matter of fact, I think I'll do that just for the offset. But anyhow, so yeah. What you were saying about that state of uncertainty, you know, and you know, they talk about no pain, no gain, and it is that pain that produces gain. Or, you know, you just have the maniac entrepreneur who's just like, go, kill, eat, go, sleep, you know what I mean? And they could be making, I know a couple of those guys that are billionaires, and they just charge, you know, that's just who they are. And then they'll just, whatever, you know, do that to the day they die almost, which is fine, you know, I mean, I get it. So, but yeah, that state of uncertainty does produce growth. That is the no pain, no gain thing. And but then, you know, having that resilience to persevere and go through it all, you know, and that's the one good thing about the United States of America, that yes, even still, you know, most of the time, not all the time, right, but most of the time, your effort produces fruit. Most of the time, you know, it some of it may be short-term fruit, but it will produce fruit. And so, you know, I do believe in doing the work, and I applaud you for the work that you're, the time and effort that you're doing, and that's you know, you're just doing it in a new way, you know, in accordance with the times. So, but it's still a crap ton of work, right? You're putting a lot of heart and soul and blood, sweat and tears and time and heartache and thinking and prayer. And you know what I mean? All that's the same. What you do and what I do at that level is all the same. The work, the effort, the time, the blood, sweat, the tears, the hopes, the fears, you know what I mean? It's just the venues are a little bit different. So there we go. That's our kumbaya moment, man.
There you go.
We're the same in a way. But those of us that work have to work, and that's a big that is a big common thread there for the work. So anyway, well, good, man. Sounds like
another
spitball between
spitball.
Yeah, man.
Which we promise won't be every week.
Although, no, it won't be every week, man. It was pretty pensive. You're like, man, you know, we're thinking about that Pepperdine. I'm like, man.
Well, it got me fired up there. You got my blood boiling a little bit. So
That's, you know why? It's because it's not a Freudian issue that you project because I'm a parental figure or something. It's not that, is it?
No.
It was a joke. It was kind of a bad joke. It was a joke.
Okay, you caught me off guard there.
Caught you off guard. Is it because I remind you of somebody? Anyway, it's a joke. Of course not. And see, that's why we hear.
Well, first of all, he doesn't ask anything in a joking manner ever.
No.
So
I wouldn't. Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily. Yeah. Yeah. Just the generation and the age. That's all. But, good, man. Well, folks, here we are, about 2 minutes to the gate. So thanks for listening to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. It was a pleasure. Don't forget to see us on our social media, our Facebook page, our Instagram page, which is called, what, The Concierge Coaches? What's our Instagram?
Everything is The Concierge Coaches.
Yes. Yeah, and the Facebook is actually The Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. And see us and listen to all the wonderful episodes on iTunes. They're in cataloged in chronological order with show notes. We're also on the archives on Channel 2 archives with our show page on LA Talk Radio. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Justin, how can folks reach you?
Nimmergood.com. So just my last name. I am the one and only. Well, along with my brother, sister, and parents, we're the only.
Yeah, don't hit only. Up his family, folks. It's probably not a good idea.
No, definitely don't do that.
Don't do that. But seriously, well, good. So
yeah. And so just a preview for next week. I'll turn it back to you, Bruce.
Really, that's fine.
So we'll have a dynamic guest on next week. So make sure you tune in. Luisa Nicola, she's from Australia, although she's currently living in New York City. So she's gotten plugged into the Gary V community out there, among others. She actually has her own podcast as well, and she's a mindset coach. So she works a lot with athletes, boxers in particular, some soccer players. She should have some great stories and some great insight.
So we'll be
excited to have her on next week.
Yes, it'll be our first mindset coach. But then again, aren't we all? But no, seriously, that's a nice brand, mindset coach. Boy, I'm on pins and needles. Can't wait. Next week can't come soon enough. All right, folks. Well, with that, we'll bid everybody a good week out there. And come see us here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. We'll see you then. Have a great week, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.